Everybody hear me? Pretty good in the back? Good, good. Thanks, James, for that introduction, and I appreciate that. Today I want to talk to you just a little bit about some work that we've been doing over the last 3 years, and it's kind of a topic that some people kind of look at it and say, well, you know, what are they doing here? Or is this really important, and should I as a producer be paying attention to some of these characteristics, particularly when we're talking about hair shedding? And it's been my experience with it, and I know James as well, that when we tell people what we've been doing over the last few years, you know, they a lot of them look at us and say, well, y'all should have been doing this earlier. We're seeing some things that kind of concern us as far as hair shedding. And so as I kind of go through this, I want you to kind of visualize, if you haven't already, maybe your herd and maybe some cows that you see, particularly during the springtime when temperatures start to warm up, cows that typically hold on to that hair coat, that winter hair coat, a little bit longer, and cows that, you know, tend to get rid of it a little bit quicker. And that's what we're going to talk about today, and some differences that we've seen, particularly with two traits, the weaning weights and also body condition scores. You know, the reason we talk about this is that if these cows pretty much hold on to this hair coat a little bit longer, and those temperatures, of course, are getting warmer, that, you know, they have to do a little bit extra to get rid of that heat. And we know pretty much cattle, as far as how they dissipate heat, you know, for the most part, they don't have these large sweat glands, of course, like humans, and being able to do that, do have some. But for the most part, how they get rid of heat is through evaporative cooling. And a lot of things influence that. Of course, temperature and wind speed and, of course, humidity. And I was just looking at the weather yesterday back in Mississippi, and we're kind of located in north central Mississippi. And they said last night at approximately about 11:30, we had temperatures above 80 and we were at 94% humidity. So, you know, you can imagine what that's like, particularly when the sun's out. So, and a lot of you see those type of temperatures, and even, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about southeast, but even when we get on up, particularly here in the state of Missouri, you can get into some pretty warm days. So these are some things probably that you're seeing that's pretty much the same as what we're seeing in the southeast. So, you know, with that, we know that respiration rate increases, you know, sweat gland activity, all of that helps to cool those cattle down. But for the most part, when we're talking about cattle that have a lot of hair on them, and again, we're not talking about basically cattle that have long hair all year. We're talking about the ability to shed that winter hair coat, particularly in the spring. You know, if you're talking about cattle that have that long hair still left on them and it's very dense, then you know from a standpoint of being like maybe you and I wearing a fur coat in the middle of the summer from a standpoint of trying to cool off. And so those cattle become stressed and start going into that heat stress period. So most of you have seen this graph before. It's not anything new, but we constantly talk about the TNZ or the thermal neutral zone, and we like for cattle basically to be in that comfort zone, because it's just like anything. Once we're kind of in that comfort zone, then we tend to perform better. And the difference is, of course, that we see is that the energy level as far as the amount that's needed for maintenance, and then compared to the amount of intake, it's this area right in here is where we're getting the most performance for the gain. So it's kind of in the middle of that. And when we have those cattle that basically don't shed early or wait until, and you'll see later, till June or July, then these cattle spend a lot of time, particularly in this area. And from that standpoint, we can't help but to think that there's going to be some suppression as far as their performance. So when heat stress occurs, basically we're talking about, of course, when temperature and humidity exceeds that zone or that critical zone, and it starts to affect their production, the evaporative cooling decreases. Of course, these cattle start to breathe a lot heavier. And Finch reported in 85 that water from sweat or sweat vapor trapped between hair follicles, when that's there, they expend more energy to regulate their, or expend more energy to regulate their temperature. So what does it do? Decrease reproduction. We know it can do that. Influence fertility. Also milk production. That's something that we were interested in as far as influencing weaning weights. And of course, a decrease in appetite. And you know as well as I do, a lot of times when we get in these situations, cattle tend to graze less. They spend more time in the shade. A lot of them go swimming, right? Okay? And they're in the ponds. So this was most of you are probably familiar with this too, the THI, or the Temperature Humidity Index. And this was some work done by some folks back in 1974. And what they were doing is looking at conception rates and how they were affected by temperature. And they basically put in humidity and they put it into an index to kind of give us an idea of when we're getting to some critical times as far as stress, and particularly from heat. So if we look here, that here's considered the normal range in the green or the green color here. And of course, as the temperature increases and as humidity increases, you can see where these scores or this index basically starts to increase. And what I want you to do is to imagine a little bit as far as what your average temperature is, particularly during the months of maybe March, April, May, June, and July, all the way through that, and kind of put yourself here as far as temperature, and then where is your humidity. And you'll see a lot of times we're basically in those areas that they consider to be alert, even danger, and even to the emergency stage. So it doesn't seem to take much to actually get to that point when we start talking about the areas which we call subtropical, you know, don't have many days as far as freezing, and we stay pretty much warm many days throughout the year. So, you know, what I'm going to talk about just a little bit is focus on where we basically took our data. But from the southeast region, like I said earlier, that subtropical environment, where is that critical threshold? Some people say that that's basically between 72 and 75 degrees Fahrenheit. And, of course, with that humidity increasing, that could even change. But, you know, we have many breeds and many breed types that are pretty much throughout this United States and that are being used, and normally basically were developed in other types of regions that really were not applicable to or adaptable to the southeast region or that subtropical environment. So I kind of put a picture up here, and of course that's a drastic, right? That would be the extreme. And we probably wouldn't expect those particular animals with that type of hair cover to really have some stress. But fortunately, we weren't evaluating those type of cattle. But, you know, how does shedding ability come in? Where does it play a role? Is it actually making an effect? And should a producer, again, should they be concerned as far as using as a selective tool? So our perception is that basically if they don't shed and they shed fairly late, that they're just not good performers. And maybe their calves are not, you know, at the level that we want them to be. So that's kind of something that we kind of think that's out there. Those animals that late shed, that they're just not productive for us. So these are pictures that we commonly see, right? And, you know, these animals stay a long period of time in the shade, particularly when these temperatures really start getting into that stress level, that, you know, the grazing periods start to decrease to some degree. They actually graze a little bit shorter time in the morning, wait a little bit later in the evening, and even in some cases when it gets to extreme temperatures, they're grazing at night. So they got to find times when they actually can go out there and do that. And we just think that, of course, the more nutrition she puts in, the better she's going to transfer that calf and weaning off a heavy calf. But a lot of times we see this, right? Going down the road and we see a lot of cows in ponds, cooling off, spending a little time there. And, you know, that's just something that's pretty common. And it can start fairly early. I know this year, particularly in Starkville, we we had, seemed like we just skipped spring. We had a late winter and really didn't, well, you always look, I always look forward to those kind of cooler, warmer type temperatures in that area of spring. But we kind of got, and it seemed like we jumped to 90 degrees really, really fast. And so this is what we see. And of course, I haven't got to that stage yet, but you'll see if you can really, some of these cows right here, they've got a lot of hair on them. And I'm not saying that just because they've got a lot of hair that they definitely are right here, or because some of these cows in here, you know, started shedding. But for the most part, they spend a lot of time doing this when we're in those days where there's got a lot of heat and humidity and the cows get pretty stressed. So what were our objectives? Well, for the first thing, we wanted to develop a method to actually estimate hair shedding. The next, to determine variation, if there was any there. Of course, that would lead us into some estimates to be able to say, well, maybe we could select for this and make some differences down the road. And to look at the effects and how it would interact with 205-day weights as well as body condition scores. So the data that we collected has been over a three-year period, like I said earlier, 2007, 8, and 09. We used 532 purebred Angus cows with calves in this particular data set. The cows ranged from 2 to 13 years of age, and we had several locations here. One at North Carolina State, the Upper Piedmont Research Station, gives you an idea of kind of the environment. These cattle basically were on the wild type and endophyte infected tall fescue. And we'll get to that in a minute because we know that can affect hair coat. Primarily fall calving season. And then in our state in Mississippi, we had our cattle there at the university. And we also had two cooperators that worked with us that was in the area. One was located in Oklahoma, about an hour north of Starkville, and another location in Winona, which was actually west, about an hour west of us. And this kind of gives you the idea of what the type of forages these cattle were, the cattle were on, warm season mixed grasses, particularly as far as the cool season forages, a lot of ryegrass, and of course, we do have the non-toxic endophyte infected tall fescue. So we didn't really have what they call the dirty fescue. But we had some cows that were calving in the spring as well as in the fall. But most of the cows are calving in the fall. And this is the basically the hair shedding scores that we come up with. And we evaluate these cattle starting in March, usually around about the third week of March. And then all the way to the month of July, approximately about 30-day intervals in between that. And we had two people, trained technicians, if you will, that basically we would ride the pastures and we would evaluate the cattle. And one technician would give a score, the other one would give a score. And we'd do that independently so we wouldn't influence each other because we were wanting to make sure that kind of what we were seeing, even though, you know, this is a subjective measurement, that we were fairly close as far as what we were seeing after we gathered the data. So these were the scores that we used. If a cow basically got a score of 5, she was not shedding at all. There was no shedding, full hair coat, hasn't even started. A 4 was approximately she had lost 25% or had started shedding at that point. A 3 would be halfway, so approximately 50%. And a 2 would be 75%, and 1 would be a cow that's completely shed. And, you know, a lot of times we would have cows that particularly like this 3, you know, it wasn't any really just distinct areas where they'd start losing it. Different cows seem to be in different areas. So, you know, sometimes a 3 for one cow may look a little bit different to another cow as far as a 3. So, you know, the way they lost the hair wasn't consistent from animal to animal. So just to give you some idea of what these scores kind of look like, this is what we call the 5. And hopefully some of you, I hope maybe not, but maybe you remember maybe a few cows you have at home that maybe look like this. Maybe late in the year, I don't know. But this cow right here, she hasn't lost anything. She's basically still got that that winter coat. She hasn't lost any hair. And to be honest with you, when we took this picture on this particular cow, this was in June. So she was usually the last one to kind of move around. She was pretty much stressed because, and of course, I think this had something to do with it for sure. A four, approximately about 25%. So she's starting to lose some. If you see here, this cow, she's starting to slick off, particularly around the neck, down in the tulip area, and then particularly here on the rump. So she's starting to do that or starting to lose some hair, would be considered a four. And this is what we consider to be a three. And you can see that this cow's pretty much starting to slick off fairly well. You know, she still has some hair here, but starting to really shine and slick off in these areas throughout here. So approximately about 50%. And so, again, you know, sometimes these cattle, you could go to the next cow that was actually, we'd call a three, and she may look a little bit different just because of where the hair was located. A two, about pretty much almost shed completely, about 75%, so she's approximately got about 25% hair left. Okay. All right, thanks. So we're looking at a cow that's basically a two, and she's pretty much got 75% of that hair gone. And then, of course, the one, which would be totally slick. And, you know, sometimes we would have cows that basically would almost be at this point, but there would be a little hair somewhere that would keep us from actually calling her a complete one. So you did have, you know, some variation there between ones and twos and like fours and fives. So that we did see that. So what are the data that we collected? The cow data, we grouped the cows into five categories. And we considered, because of that variation, that one to two or four to five, we considered a cow that once she reached the three, we considered her to definitely have started shedding by that point. So the number of cows that basically had reached that point in March, then basically that would be a category, and the cows that reached that basically that three in April, and then May, and June, and July. So we grouped them based on that, and we called those our month of first shedding scores. And so we were considering that with a three or less. If they'd reached that, and then basically that's where we would categorize them. And then, of course, we evaluated them at a body condition score at weaning. The calf data, most of the calves, of course, were approximately 6 months of age at weaning. And we used adjusted 205-day weights, and we, of course, we considered this as far as the trait of the cow. As far as analysis and looking at the phenotypic analysis, the 205-day weight, and the body condition scores, first model we used mixed procedures and SAS with year, location, sex, and, of course, the month of first shedding, has fixed effects and the random effect of sire. For body condition score, age of calf was entered as a covariate to adjust for that. Age of cow, we're at two levels, heifer as far as and cow. Fixed effect was, that was a fixed effect added to the model. And then our second model, and the reasoning in this probably will be a little bit more clear to you later, when we started seeing some relationship to some of the scores, then we actually looked at it from the standpoint of whether the cows were actually shed by a certain month, okay? And it turned out that was basically May, what we were working off of. But we developed what we call adapted scores, and that actually replaced the month of first shedding. So then we went from five categories to basically two. So if the cows had reached that three, particularly in March, April, and May, they were in that category. And then the second category were the cattle that basically were in June and July. So we went from five categories to two. The genetic analysis, in order to look at the variance components, we used the program Threshold Gibbs 2F90 program. Actually, let's look at categorical traits fit with fixed effects of year, sex of calf, and location. Random effects of cow and a permanent environmental effect were included. And once we started analyzing the data, the body condition score was not significant at all. So we basically, today I'm just going to report to you on the numbers on the adjusted 205-day weights. So this kind of gives you an idea of the percentage of cows that were actually a 3 or less in the various months. So we looked at around 16% actually had achieved a 3 or less in March. And then approximately 22-23% had reached that point in April. 25% in May, started to decline a little bit as far as June, and then of course in July. And we did have some cows that basically never got to that point, even in July. Never got to that point, never got to that 3 or less. And so you'd see that small percentage here. So that kind of gives you an idea of when most of the cows were actually shedding and getting rid of that hair coat. Okay, give you some idea as far as the means on these 205-day weights. Here again is the month of first shedding. Again, that's 3 or less from March all the way through July. And if you see here, and if you kind of notice, you can see kind of a trend here as far as what the weaning weights started to do. And they started to, the trend here was starting to decline from March to July. So, you know, that's, again, these are those adjusted means that we had. So it kind of shows you a little bit that maybe there's something going on here. Okay? That maybe shedding has some influence as far as the weaning weights on these calves. But this is probably one that's going to make or probably give you a little bit more information. We started comparing those means from the cows in March to April, and as well as March, May, and all of those contrasts. What I've highlighted here for you are the ones in red that were significant, that says there was a difference in between those weaning weights on those cows. If you'll notice a little bit, when we start comparing some of the first months to the last month, last of the month that we actually took the data, the March to June, we looked at about a 19-pound difference in those particular cows with those calves. To March to July, basically almost a 46-pound difference. So those cows that were shedding at 3 or less in March, this was a difference in their calves, basically compared to those that hadn't gotten to that point or maybe had gotten that point in July. So that was pretty significant for us to see that kind of difference and to see that difference in the weight itself. And again, if you look here with April with July as well, you're looking at about a 38-pound difference. From May to July, 38. And then even we've seen some differences between the last 2 months as well. So, you know, that's kind of give us the idea about maybe we needed to go from that 5 category down to that 2, that adapted score. And that kind of give us a way to kind of look at the cattle a little bit different. So when we replace this month of first shedding with that adapted score, again, like I said, we grouped those cows, the March, April, and May cows together, and then looked at them the ones from June and July and compared the differences there. And the reason we did that was because one of the things that we think about is that, you know, if this is something that we can use, we know that we're not going to be out there from March to July collecting this data monthly. Okay? We don't have enough time to do that, right? So we need to find an area or a time when we know or feel like that that's a good time to assess those cows at one time so that we can identify those females pretty early. And so that's how the data actually fell out. So that's why we kind of looked at it from the standpoint of those adapted scores. And if you look here are those least square means on the animals that basically had shed by May. And then you're looking at the weaning weights here on the cattle that had shed after May. So those are those June and July cattle. And what we've seen here was very similar to the other ones, but we've seen basically using these two categories that we had a 24-pound difference in those calves. So the cows that shed early weans a little bit heavier calves than the ones that, that shed in that last phase or basically after mate. So looking at our variances, particularly for the one that we wanted to definitely focus on here where the adaptive score, the heritability on adaptive score was 0.35. So that's moderate, and at least that tells me that we definitely can select for animals that actually shed quicker. So there is some variability there to allow us to do that. And also the genetic correlation here was pretty high as well. And basically what that meant, and of course that negative number doesn't mean bad, but basically what it says is that as we went from the adapted score before May and then of course after that, and what it said was is as we moved in that direction that our weaning weights were going down. So that's why that negative number was there, that negative association. So, in conclusion, we did find some evidence, you know, that, like I said, we've asked this question to ourselves. I wonder if there's anything going on from standpoint as far as performance or production from these cows just because they're waiting till later on in the year to shed off. And we did find some evidence of that. Now, of course, this was a fairly small data set, and we're actually still collecting data now. I've got a new cooperator down in Mississippi that we're working with. So we're going to start collecting even more data on these cows to hopefully give us a little bit more confidence in these numbers. Cows can be evaluated from 1 to 5. And the way we basically seen that split was that you could probably do it in May. And if, you know, what we seen was that when she got to that 3, then basically we would look at her that next month and she had practically almost lost all of her hair. So she was at the point of shedding and getting rid of that hair coat. So that was a good thing to see. Hair shedding, what we found is moderately heritable. And, you know, one thing that with that, should we consider basically looking at cows that are 4 and 5s at May, or at that time, should we look at maybe culling those animals? Okay? Now, particularly maybe from the southeast. But, you know, you might, in certain areas, maybe north of here, we might want to make maybe that hair coat stay a little bit longer. I don't know. But I think there is something going on, particularly between the two environments. And so from our standpoint, that might be some animals that we need to get rid of, the ones that are not shedding are waiting till late in the year to do that. What are some other explanations? Well, we're not definitely saying that that's the primary cause for the decrease in these weaning weights. I know that the folks at North Carolina State have talked about maybe looking at some prolactin concentrations. We know that it is associated with lactation and definitely associated with the hair regression regulation, if you will. We know that it's been experienced in some species, not particularly the effect of milk yield as far as beef cattle, but does have something to do with lactogenesis. And the type of diet, I mentioned that earlier, most of you probably said, well, since those cattle were in that environment, they were on that infected fescue, then we know that that's going to be a problem. Well, I talked with Dr. Cassidy and, of course, Kent as well, and they said, you know, yeah, that's it, but, you know, you got to learn how to manage those cattle in that environment. And he said, even though that's there, we're still having cattle that are shedding quicker. So they're not keeping that hair coat. So even if that affects there, he was still having some variability. So what does that tell me from a standpoint as far as, you know, the type of cattle there? There are some cattle there that may be less resistant to what's going on, and some cattle that are more resistant. Those cattle, maybe it's not affecting them as much, and they're actually going ahead and shedding that coat off. The other thing is another question. What about temperature? Is that some effects? Remember in that, particularly that graph there, we had most of those cattle, or a lot of the cattle that were in March. Most of those cattle, those 3 and less, were at our station, were at our locations in Mississippi. And practically almost all of them. Most of the other ones, they didn't really start seeing those 3s and those less than that until April. So is there something going on there? Is there temperature that's triggering this thing? And I think there's probably some answers out there. We just basically got to look at all avenues and try to see what's going on. In conclusion, I do want to thank some folks for this because, you know, I definitely couldn't have done it without them. Definitely Dr. Cassidy and Kent Gray for the analysis and putting the data together. Dr. Parrish, this project was actually started before I started at MSU, and I was just fortunate enough to get in on it and really enjoyed collecting the data and working with Kent and Joe. And of course, I do want to express my gratitude to the cooperators that we had, Mr. and Mrs. Jack Evans over at E Ranch in Winona. You know, these guys, you know, I really appreciate their time because I felt bad a lot of times because it'd take us some, you know, in some cases they'd have cows in different pastures and we'd have to go and travel to evaluate each cow. And you know, and sometimes that was pretty tough, and particularly when we were getting toward the, you know, the summertime, you know, you definitely didn't go out there and do this, okay, later on in the day. You had to do it really, really early or late in the day. And you had to have some pretty good sunshine because particularly when these black cattle would go up under those shade trees, it was kind of hard to assess them a lot of times. And so, you know, there on several occasions we'd get kind of late. You know, we had a few in the ponds that we had to, you know, kind of deal with. So, you know, these guys pretty much took a lot of time out of their day to help us with that. Mr. Mike Howell was at Southern Shine Pastures. And also definitely can't leave out the American Angus Association, which funded this project. Definitely want to appreciate them for doing that and allow us to go and look at cattle. So with that, I'm going to leave it at that and entertain any questions. And do I want to mention that we are looking at, particularly at our station, and I know Dr. Castingham has done this as well, looking at Herefords and as well as Charlotte. And so we're not just leaving it with Angus breed. We want to look at some other cattle as well, other breeds. So with that, I'll take any questions. Yes, sir. No, sir. Well, we have the data, but we haven't done any analysis on it yet. The problem with that is trying to make sure that it was a cow's fault and not particularly management, particularly when we're looking at different cooperators. And so we do have that information, but we just focus on just the cows with calves. We were doing that at weaning. At weaning. No, we were doing that at weaning. Yeah, she asked about, sorry about that, she asked about when did we assess body condition scores. And we assessed them at weaning. We didn't assess body condition scores for each month. I guess we were kind of looking at it from a standpoint, from an application standpoint, when a producer would probably do this. So, you know, I guess I can tell you from the standpoint as far as looking at the cattle that we had, it didn't seem like we had any issues there, but I don't really have any data to back that up. Yes, sir. No, sir. He was asking about uptake as far as minerals, particularly copper. We haven't done any biopsies or anything like that to look at that data. No, sir, we haven't. Yes. Well, we're seeing some differences, and there's no doubt. Yes, we're seeing some differences. We are. We're seeing some difference. Now, what magnitude, I think we still need to find out. And there could be some other things going on that we haven't accounted for. No, we have not. And that would actually be a next step. We want to go now and actually, if we can get some help from some other contributors and some other people in different areas, different environments, and actually assess their cattle and start to get that information. So that would be a step that we would, you know, like to go to next. Yes. You know, we looked at age. It was in the model, so we didn't see any differences there as far as the cows, as far as age. And we even went from the standpoint of just looking at just maybe two-year-olds compared to older cattle, and we still didn't see anything there. What was the other part? Feedability. I believe Kent's in here somewhere, I think. Kent, we did look at that, right, and you said it was a 0.7, I believe, 0.71 as far as repeatability on those scores. So we did see repeatability estimates pretty large. That was another question. Yes, ma'am. Right. Well, the repeatability estimate basically is going to do that for us, right? And it's going to look at it, were these scores repeatable each year? And we did find it that they were. That the cows tended to do the same thing each year. She asked about other traits. I don't guess, you know, maybe I don't think we looked about other traits that were associated with maybe the shedding. I mean, we've got data as far as, you know, estimates about whether they had a calf or not. We haven't looked at that yet. That would be the next step. But as far as other traits, I think that's pretty much all we've had so far. Yes, Joe. So I think it's just we're kind of scraping the surface here, and it's intrigued us, so we'll want to look further. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Well, we haven't thought about that at all. That'd be pretty hard, I guess, to evaluate them, you know, from the standpoint. But no, we haven't thought about that. Sure haven't. Well, if you're talking about purebreds, are you talking about pure? Oh, okay. All right, you're talking about fossils. Right. No, we haven't thought about that. Sure have. But, you know, there may be some similar things out there that's going on with this, you know, this particular sample. Yeah. Yeah. Anybody else? Question? Yeah. Thank you.